This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Brought to you by Quick Assist. Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
All right, you are indeed in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610, and we will indeed go around the NFL, which is brought to you by Quick Assist. Last minute change of plans and you can't use your tickets? Download Quick Assist from your app store today. They'll take care of the process for you and find the best price on the market. That's Quick Assist. Quick Assist, your ticket everywhere. I would like to start here. Joe Burrow, they were playing on Monday Night Football in Springfield, if you're watching the Disney Plus Simpsons broadcast. But in real life, they were at AT&T Stadium in the greater DFW area up there facing off against the Cowboys. Obviously, they got a victory there. But in that game, or during that game, while that was happening, somebody was out here violating. It was Joe Burrow's had his house broken into. And this is actually one in a string of kind of break-ins. You'll remember, or maybe you will remember.
Tyreek had one?
Yes, Tyreek's house in Miami, I believe, was one of those. Mm-hmm. But I vividly recall Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce's houses were broken into. This is something that the NFL has actually reached out to NFL players, letting them know that, hey, there apparently seems to possibly be a connection where people are scouting out when dudes are out of town and going and hitting their houses.
They definitely. Oh, yeah. Oh, Patrick Mahomes, he out of town. So let's hit up that crib.
Like, that's one of the tough things about it. Like, your job tells people that you are not at the house, right? Mm-hmm. What are we supposed to do about this? You are not there. But yeah, Joe Burrow had his house. You know, there was items stolen from it. It was ransacked. And yeah, it is a streak of burglaries. Now, the thing that has gotten kind of, that's gotten a lot of traction is that on the like when it came to the police report, there was a person, a model named Olivia Ponton, I don't know how to pronounce her name, and I'm gonna be completely honest, not looking it up in this moment, but supposedly she works for Joe Burrow in some capacity.
I bet she does.
And I think that, look, man, the social media, this is where we get to be a little bit egregious, that we get into things that maybe ain't all of our business, per se. But
let's do it anyway.
People got in all the way in, and supposedly, according to Ponton, she reportedly said on the police report that someone broke into my house, noting that a bedroom window was shattered and that the room was ransacked and everything. Now, Joe Burrow, in his media availability, I believe this was yesterday, he started without taking questions. He immediately went and had a statement in which he said, "We live a public life, and one of my least favorite parts of it is the lack of privacy, and that has been difficult for me to deal with my entire career." He talked more about it, but then he really did start by saying, "Obviously, everybody's heard what's happened. I feel like my privacy has been violated in more ways than one."
Yeah.
And way more is already out there than I want to be said, and that's all I'll say about that. So, like, he basically let it be known, hey, man, y'all in my business right now, and I need y'all out of it.
Well, I mean, it's on the police report.
So it is public domain. This Olivier Ponton.
This man. Well, actually, we
can look this up. Hey, so. It's a police report.
Well, actually,
it's a police report. It's out there. And yes, there is a certain amount of, you know, why are you doing this? But it happens. It happens every day. You know, people start speculating and saying one thing or another. First of all, on the break-in,
yes.
Before I get into the other stuff.
Before you talk about the 22-year-old influencer.
This is who's rich. But this is, like, the NFL needs to do more than just say, hey, be careful. Maybe they are.
But
maybe they do, though? The NFL will drive you home if you're an NFL player and you feel like you've had so much to drink. They have people in every city that do exactly
that.
Yeah,
but you want them to have rotating people at the folks' house 24/7? I think that's where
it is. Or at least coordinate or help pay whatever it may be.
Probably what they can do is have, like, a clearinghouse in the same way that they do for...
Something like that.
For, what's the word? I'm like, agents, right? Like, where they're like, hey, these are some agents that you can actually trust that won't, you know, go bad
Some security guys that have been vetted.
Exactly.
That know exactly what to do.
Because I think Seth made a great point about this earlier today, is that when you think about it, and he likened it to heist movies, but he's not wrong in this regard, mm-hmm. is that, hey, man, there needs to be some inside intel a lot of these times, and it might could be that there's some level of, like, security there and that people are giving them the you know, the what's it on how to get in, and then boom, here you go, mm-hmm. right? Maybe that is, but yeah, it would be interesting to see. I just don't wonder. I wonder, like, how far is your employer supposed to go on your private property and those things? But yeah, this story, all in all, and forgive me if you feel like this is a reach, it again makes me look at our society and, like, yo, we are not in a good place. Like, people, and look, mm-hmm. I understand, right? They out here, like, maybe they feel themselves some level of Robin Hood, right? We rob it from the rich, so it's not that big a deal, whatever. But it does feel like, again, people have that sense. It feels like people have enough of that sentiment where maybe this is just like wanting, hey, man, we just stealing, right? Maybe that's all it is. But it does feel like we have a lot of things. And yes, I am pointing it back to that one thing that happened in New York that one time where it feels like hey, the people who are on the bottom of this thing, yeah. feels like they're getting they're getting restless.
Well, but the other thing about this that is really alarming, I think Seth is right. There might be some sort of leak or some sort of info or intel or whatever it may be. But it is clearly a nationally organized thing. This isn't like just some dude, hey, you know, Burrow's going to be out of town. I think I'm going to break a window and try to steal what I can. No, this is clearly something that...
They are targeting rich athletes.
Yeah.
NFL players.
Yeah. As of right now.
And honestly...
This isn't a neighborhood gang. You know, this is something organized.
Honestly, this has been happening for years, man. Mm-hmm. It's very known to be happening to rappers and stuff like that. So, like, I don't know a way around it, man. The only thing I can say is maybe do what Tua did.
Shout out to Tua Tagovailoa, who was like, look, man, we gonna nip this in the bud right here. This was him on the podium speaking to the assembled media about this, because he wants to let you know what will happen if you try this around his crib.
My house had gotten broken into, not necessarily my house, but one of my cars. And so it's a little too close for my comfort with my family being in the house. So we got personal security to take care of all of that when we're on the road. We got someone with my wife, got, you know, someone also at the house, surveying the house. So just to let that be known, they are armed. So I hope if you decide to go to my house, you think twice.
Tua said, we keep that thang on us.
Just so you know, they're packing.
Yeah.
And you don't want to hear that thang talk, is what he's saying, basically.
They're packing.
Yeah.
That's probably the best way to handle it, to be honest.
Yeah.
That is tough. I do appreciate that he was like, hey, man, they broke into my car, and that was enough. He said, this stops here.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you get in the gate, and you get into the car, mm-hmm. no further. Any more steps, and it is your ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, imagine him coming out of Walgreens, and the back window shattered. He's like, oh, no, that's it.
This is enough.
Yeah.
I draw the line.
Let me hire a security team.
Yeah. Yes,
I draw the line here. all right, so let's continue around the NFL. And this has got kind of like, this is a little bit deviated from the NFL, but I think we all understand, like, Bill Belichick is arguably, if not the greatest coach in NFL history.
He is. I think most people would agree.
And it is now confirmed that he is going to take that show on the road to, Tobacco Road, right? Mm-hmm. Like, to Chapel Hill to be the next head coach at the University of North Carolina. And I have even less belief in what is, I'm less convinced about this than I was before, and you know I had a level of skepticism.
That it would work, you mean?
Yes. He is going to take, and he's already said, like, on Pat McAfee, he was like, if I take this, and now we know that he is taking this, that he is going to, like, it's going to run like an NFL team, and there's going to be development and all, and this is going to be a pathway, which now that I think about it, oh man, was already Cruton, right? He was on Pat McAfee Cruton, like, basically telling these young boys, hey, if you come here, I will get you, almost on some, like, Calipari stuff, right? Because that's one of the things I did respect very much about John Calipari when he was at Kentucky, now obviously at Arkansas, is that he was like, look, man,
I'm going to get you drafted.
Yeah.
Look, I understand. The game is messed up, right? We technically can't pay you right now. But what I am going to do is I'm going to make sure that you go and get paid where they can pay you big, right? You come here, you know, you give me a year, and I'll send you to the league. And it feels kind of like that's somewhat of what Bill Belichick is saying. However, it just, I feel like there's a level of hubris in this. And you want to know how why I feel this, Lopez, as I realize I'm just, you know, I'm just speaking and not
letting you talk. No, because I've got the counterpoint for you.
The thing that I have that makes me feel like, oh, they're operating with a level of hubris here, is that he has come in, and yes, he is, I believe he is a year older or a year younger than Mac Brown. He's right in that same age.
72,
right?
I think, yeah.
Mac Brown that has just left, right? And also Nick Saban right around that age, and he just left because he's tired of this. You know who he's hiring to be the general manager up
yes,
there?
Yes, I do.
Who is he hiring to be the general manager?
That would be Michael Lombardi.
Michael Lombardi, an NFL guy, right? I don't know the fullness of his hires, but it feels like he's coming in, right? That hire makes me feel like he's coming in and he's like, damn what all you college folks have been doing all this time. I know how to actually do this. And buddy, right, if you think, and I think one of the things he was talking about when it came to the end of his tenure with the Patriots is like something getting away from the crazy. If you think that college football is the place where you get away from the crazy, you got another thing coming.
Yeah.
This is an entirely crazy ecosystem that has only gotten crazier, and coaches are leaving this place now because it's gotten crazier.
Well,
if you think that you're just going to walk in because you've done all this on the NFL level, ooh, buddy, it's going to be interesting.
Here's my counterpoint.
Please.
Because if I were a North Carolina football fan or a North Carolina fan, I would actually be very excited about this. And it has nothing to do with how many wins he gets on the football field.
Okay.
And let me explain that.
Please.
The first thing he did, they did, when they hired Bill Belichick, is they went from $4 million in NIL football money to 20. And that's going to get higher.
Okay.
So whether he wins or not, $20 million, the amount of money they're going to be able to have and spend on recruits, that is never going to go down. Like, they're not going to say, oh, Bill Belichick lost, he's gone, let's take it back to $4 million. That ain't going to happen. They've got this. No, it's not. Because, like, one of their big issues was NIL and organization and structure and all that. Well, he came in and somehow, before he even signed the contract, got them to go to $20 million. I don't see where North Carolina is going to, you know, if he failed, let's say he goes, whatever, 7-5 and 5-7, and then he's out. They're still going to have the basis of a program that is taking another level. Here's the other thing he did.
Are we pretending like North Carolina is one of these little sisters of the poor?
No. But I'm saying, but they weren't spending on football, and now they are.
Yeah,
and
but when you say spending on football, where's that coming from, right? That's not coming from the school.
No. But I'm saying that's my point. Like, those guys, those big alums, those big businessmen that are part of the North Carolina that all of a sudden realize this is the only way to do it. Bill Belichick convinced us. They went from four. They more than quadrupled the amount of NIL money for football. I can't see that ever going back to, all right, let's go back to $4 million. So already their footprint, their ability to get players into North Carolina, no matter what he wins, is higher.
I don't fully agree with that, but let's even assume that that's the case. In college football, what is the incentive for giving this money typically when it comes to boosters, the booster class?
Well, they get a piece of it. They get a relationship.
Relationship, and then what else does boosters typically have?
Like what?
Say-so.
Well, they don't have say-so with Belichick.
But that's the thing.
Yeah.
You going to tell them boosters that they don't got say-so when he put $20 million in the pot?
They did.
Like, these are all of the circumstances. And I understand say-so and bringing in Belichick. But you don't think that somebody, especially, you've been around a few rich people in your travels. You don't think that those people have enough, like, a high enough view of themselves where they think, like, hey, man, I got something I could tell you. You should be doing this.
But they're also angry, and they finally see a path to becoming an altogether different program. And I just can't see. I mean, that just doesn't happen in life. Like, we're going to raise our budget to $20 million, unless the company's going under, and college football's not going under.
Yeah, but college football. And that's the thing is, I don't know how many things that you can place, that you can overlay on college football, and you're like, hey, that's nice and neat. Ooh, no, this is where I think a lot of people were coming from, and maybe I shouldn't speak for a lot of people, maybe I should just speak for myself, right? This is where I had a little bit of a concern with Deion Sanders coming in, and kudos to him, he has found a way to like up the value of that program and do some things just based off of the star power and then obviously the coaching job that he has done there. But just hey, you come in and you think you're going to rage against the machine of college football, and this thing has been around for a long time, and some of these things are not just because everybody else here is stupid. They work this way for a reason. And if you think that you're just going to come in and change all of this, I do think that you're going to run into some walls.
I think that they're setting a standard. They're reaching an altogether different level as a football program, and it's just going to feed on itself whether or not he's successful. Now, I gave the examples of, let's say he's not successful, 7-5 and 5-7, and he's out. All right, let's say he is successful. I mean, North Carolina is a huge university. I mean, it is a money university. It is it's just a big, big place in a place where there is a lot of money. Let's say he goes 10-2. That North Carolina will not. It'll take years, if not decades, for them to get back to, well, they're North Carolina. They're kind of a sleeping giant. I think they're, if he is successful, this thing is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So hiring Bill Belichick for me was a good move for the program. I don't know if he's going to win, but it was a great move for the program.
I mean, and this is where, like, hey, us talking heads, it's all fine and good, but this is where we have to wait until just the rubber hits the road and see how it goes. But it is deeply, deeply interesting. And yeah, shout out to Cam on the YouTube reminding us, Connor Wegman, going to stay in the general area. He commits to go to the University of Houston, be a quarterback there. Do you like that? I mean, because you seem to like Connor Wegman.
I love the kid. I say kid. But he is a great dude that did it the right way. He's completely broken up about not being able to stay at A&M because he had to leave. But he's perfect. He's here. He's from Houston. He was a high school player of the year.
Yeah.
That's where I first met him when he was here. No, I'm very happy for him.
Yeah. And that begins Willie Fritz's, really putting a full imprint on this program and seeing how he's able to build a program, as you like to say, in college
program.
Football. I really should come back to the NFL fully here because I realized, I got in the college football bag and all of that fandom came out. I do want to salute the Senate for actually getting something done, as, sometimes cannot be the case at that level. 2 years ago, we know that DeMar Hamlin had that cardiac arrest on the field. That was really a harrowing time. Watching that live, it was wild. And then obviously, like, getting back to playing football and all these things, right? Like that was all the conversation. And so, that really brought back, brought more into focus, the ideas of, the AEDs, right? Yeah. The defibrillators that, factored in. That's some of the things that he's talked about a lot. And thankfully, the Senate has moved on it as they passed what is referred to as the HEARTS Act, which is the Health Education Awareness Research and Training in Schools Act when it comes to cardiomyopathy. And so this is going to increase the availability and fund the availability of CPR training and AEDs. And so I think, just kind of in the nation, I think that that's such a huge thing and a wonderful thing to come out of what was objectively a terrible thing in the NFL.
It boggles the mind that it took that, because it should be something that it's not expensive and you should be able to have guys on site, women on site that can do those things. So I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, a lot of schools will be benefiting from this. So happy to at least turn what was a really terrifying incident, and I, as opposed to just being like, hey, this is a redemption story in the NFL, into some things that are actionable that are going to help a lot of young folks and people just in general in America. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, it is a Thursday, and we often talk to this fine gentleman. Let's get ready for Texans Dolphins with former Texans defensive lineman and one of my favorite Nigerians of all time, N.D. Kalu. We'll do it next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Yeah, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. It is a thirsty Thursday. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Let's go to the phone line. There's a lot of other things I could talk about. Some of them I want to, some of them I don't. But I don't want to keep this man waiting. He's a busy entrepreneur. Like, he is a real estate mogul. And so him giving us his time on Thursdays, we have to value it. It's our guy, former Texas defensive lineman, N.D. Kalu. N.D., what's happening, man?
Far from a mogul, considering I just stole a Christmas tree stand from Kroger by accident. But I was very excited I got that $5 stand for free.
Did they not charge you, or did you just put it in your back pocket?
No, so I wait for the cheap trees to come out. So they had the little clearance sign on it. And I was arguing with the lady. I said, this is for the tree. She said, well, why'd you charge you for the stand? And I said, there's no stand on it. But by the time I loaded it in my truck, I was like, oh, there was a stand on it. But
no harm, no foul.
True Nigerian man. I appreciate it. I like that.
Waiting for the cheap Christmas trees.
So that's my confession for the week.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Very good. All right, ND, let's go into the football of it all. Texans back off of the bye week. They will be facing off against the Miami Dolphins. And the real shocking stuff that happened earlier on in the week is that we finally got a little bit of a resolution to a question that we've been asking up and down all season long. In fact, we personally on the show have been turning it to Figgy and asking him, when is Christian Harris coming back? And he is now, you know, back to practice. I'm interested in, from your perspective and what you've gathered from this organization, especially because John Lopez has a little bit of something in writing on this and investing. Do you feel like he will play this weekend, or do you feel like this is just a getting him up to speed so that he can eventually return to the team, but maybe not this week?
As far as playing, I don't know, because the coaches, they always keep that close to the vest. And I never understood why they're not more transparent with that. I don't think Miami, Mike McDaniel, is going to change their game plan, you know, if they find out that Christian Harris is going to play. But with the time that he's been out, I do believe Russ may have set in, and I can see a scenario if he does play, he's going to be on a play count at practice. You know, they're going to probably have him run extra gassers, if you will, to try to get back into game speed as soon as possible. But even if he does play, I'd be shocked or pleasantly surprised if he gets more than 20 snaps.
That's the number that I put on it. I said 20, maybe. Well, I think I said percentage. I said 20% to 30%. But where would he help this team the most? Yeah, the Christian Harris that you know and you like very much.
The sideline to sideline aspect. I mean, obviously we're missing a huge piece in the middle with, you know, Al Shire being out for the next 3 weeks, which is ridiculous, but I digress. But just getting somebody there behind the defensive line, somebody in that second phase of the defense who can make plays, whether it's covering tight ends, running backs out of the backfield, or the sideline to sideline plays that he makes. I mean, with Al Shire out, and I know it's not the exact same position, but just that second phase of defense, and when I say second phase, I'm calling the defensive line the first phase right behind them, to be able to add a piece when you've lost such a big piece. I think he could help in coverage and obviously against the run.
Now, real quick, I just want to ask, when I have an opportunity to ask a player, I'm like, hey, let me probe into your mind and your kind of experience here. Is there anything besides just kind of the basic conditioning aspect of it that's tough when you're coming back from an extended period of missing?
Yeah, just the whole reading and reacting, you know, for a linebacker, getting comfortable with understanding the offensive lineman's stance. Because when you're a linebacker and you have to make the decision, am I dropping in coverage or am I blowing up the A-gap on a run? That's tough. So you want to make sure that you understand the pre-snap reads, you know, the way the offensive linemen are set in their stance, the tips that the quarterback may be giving you, the depth of the running back. A lot of times you can tell if it's going to be run or pass by the depth of the running back. So just kind of getting into that thought process and being able to make those decisions at the blink of an eye.
So Reggie and I posed the question. Well, I posed the question and we discussed where would the Texans, where are they hurt more in the next 3 weeks by not having Jalen Petrie, who, as you may have heard, is out having a pec surgery, or Al Shire? Well, you know, because both of those guys are going to be out for at least three, and in Petrie's case, the entire rest of the season. I kind of feel like Petrie might be a bigger hit.
That's a tough one. That's like saying, what hurts more, knowing that your wife cheated on you or stole all your money? Like, I mean, they're both huge losses because of what Petrie gives you in the run game. And I love the way the coaches have adjusted his responsibilities. He had what some call a sophomore slump after an awesome rookie year. People thought he was exposed. So they said, okay, we understand what his strengths are. And I thought he was having another monster season, especially with the run support. And then Al Shire, I mean, he's the heartbeat of the defense. So losing those two guys, that's tough. And if I had to choose, because I like answering questions and not avoiding them, I guess I would go slightly with Al Shire because of what he brings as far as being a leader, the communication, and the heartbeat of the defense.
We're talking to our guy, ND Kalu, former defensive lineman for your Houston Texans. And I want to get right to that tip. You've obviously played quite a bit in this league, and you faced off against offenses that were trying to attack a defense in various different ways. What's the particular challenge, especially for pass rushers, especially for the defensive line, with a team that gets the ball out as quickly as Miami does? How do you go about trying to attack that?
hands up. And I love what you said. It lets me know you're watching film. Like, Tua does a great job of getting the ball out very quickly, similar to a former Miami Dolphin in Dan Marino. And I'm absolutely not comparing him to Dan Marino.
I don't know. That's kind of what I heard here, Andy.
In that one little aspect, because, you know, I've had the opportunity to play against Dan Marino towards the end of his career. And all I remember is I was having one of my best games as far as a one-on-one matchup against the tackle. But it didn't matter because of the quick release, because Dan Marino was just releasing that ball so quick. So Will Anderson, you know, Danielle Hunter, these guys are from Mario Edwards. They have to make sure that they continue to do what they do as far as their one-on-one matchups, but you have to get your hands up. You have to get in throwing lanes. You know, he's a little bit shorter, so you have to obstruct his view because he's not a guy that's going to get sacked. You're not going to have that 6, 7, 8 sack game against Tua because of that quick release, but you can still disrupt the passing game by getting those hands up and understanding where his passing lanes are.
I'm curious on your thoughts on what's going on the interior offensive line, because obviously Juice Scruggs is going to be out. Foot, I believe, is what it was. But we were thinking, okay, is Kenyon Green? We didn't even know he was going to come back. Is Kenyon Green going to step right in and play that with Jarrett Patterson at center? But all of a sudden, we got Zach Thomas at practice yesterday. Is that just coach, you know, trying not to you know, give away his hand, or maybe letting Kenyon Green come back slowly? Or how do you see it playing out on the interior?
You know what? I really think that's coach just saying, okay, Juice is out. I'm throwing any and everybody out there to see who wants to compete, to see who looks the best during the week, because we have to practice, we have to protect CJ Stroud. So I don't think they have anybody that's available that you say hands down, that's the guy. I think it's like, okay, we're going to throw it out there. Y'all are going to compete, not just on the football field, but in the meeting rooms when I ask you a pass pro, pass protection question, who's answering it quicker. So I think, John, and I could be dead wrong, that it's more of a let's throw everybody in the blender, see who comes out at top to replace Scruggs.
You have already let us know that you are going to answer a question and not run for it. I'm going to use this against you. I'm making you now the deciding factor. If it's either, you know, maybe Zach Thomas or what have you, or if it's Kenyon Green, and maybe even once Juice Scruggs is ready again, which one of those guys do you go to, especially understanding that Kenyon Green was the starter, he got injured, but you seem to have found a little bit of stability with Juice Scruggs. Like, which one do you have more of confidence, or would you more go towards for the remainder of this year?
If healthy, Juice Scruggs. If healthy. Now, if we're talking about Kenyon Green versus Zach Thomas, that would be tough for anybody to answer unless you're at practice watching the unless you're watching the one-on-ones. I feel more comfortable with Juice Scruggs. I want to see Kenyon Green. Anytime an offensive guard, I should say, is taken in the first three rounds, not just the first two rounds, I'm expecting them to be a legitimate starter in the league. When you spend that type of draft capital on an interior lineman, I want to see them, you know, have that 10-year career. So with him being a first-round pick, and I know the pick doesn't matter in year three. Heck, the pick doesn't matter as soon as the regular season starts of your rookie year. But I want to see every opportunity for Kenyon Green to succeed, or at the very minimum, be comfortable in saying that we gave him every chance and it just didn't work out.
All right, one more for you here from me, Andy. Coming off a bye week, is it asking too much to say, okay, they're going to be healthier, they're going to be rested, they're going to have a better plan for things, and all of a sudden some of these quote-unquote problems that we're seeing are going to all of a sudden get better?
That's what you hope. That's what sounds good. That's the easy thought that, hey, they have 2 weeks to prepare. They're going to be in their playbooks. The coaches are going to be on the whiteboard. They're going to self-scout. You know, I remember Andy Reid would tell us that during the bye weeks, they would swap film with the offense and defense. So the offensive coordinator would give the defensive coordinator all the offensive film and say, hey, how would you attack us, and vice versa. So if they did all that, you do expect and hope to see a cleaner game. You expect to see different plays that maybe we haven't seen on the offensive side of the ball, maybe a little bit more aggressive with the play calling. But I don't think you just come back and say, you know what, we fixed everything. Let's go on this 4-win streak and go straight to the Super Bowl. And I hope that happens, but
yeah, of course. Yeah,
that would be great. We're all pulling for a Super Bowl here at this point. Not just at this point, at any point. But what's your read on this game? Texans winning this one?
Man, I'm nervous. They don't have to win.
Must win, John.
But it's definitely not a must win. To me, the only time must win is true is when you're in the playoffs or you're playing in
the game where you have
to win to get into the playoffs. Like, that's the only time it's a must win.
That's my guy right there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've always thought that. But the thing is, for the perception, for the idea of this being a top-tier team, you have to beat good teams. And Miami, they're pretty much on their last leg. They pretty much have to win out. They're not going to win their division if they want to get a wild card. They do have a lot of talent, so I think this would be a very good win. So I'm putting money on the Texans, but I'm watching that game with a little bit of bead of sweat coming down my forehead.
Does Mark Gastineau have is he legitimate in his beef with Brett Favre?
I just saw that and I thought it was sad.
Yeah,
like, as a guy who looked up to Mark Gastineau, who wanted to tailor my game after a guy like that. When I saw that interaction, I actually felt bad for Favre also.
Mm-hmm.
But I really feel bad with a lot of these greats, the NFL greats, like the Mark Gastineau, who it feels like all they do is hold on to the past and they can't get through. We all knew that Brett Favre gave that record mm-hmm. to Michael Strahan. I remember watching that game. I was still playing, and I was like, that's kind of, chicken bleep, the way it happened. And I'm a Michael Strahan fan. But to see Gastineau, and he was really hurt, and I get it. But, man, you're Mark Gastineau. Like, the people that matter, that know football, they know about your greatness. And for it to really take a toll on him, I actually felt bad for him.
Yeah, that was kind of the way that I felt mm-hmm. as well. That was a tough scene. Andy Kalu, always appreciate you giving us a little bit of your time. I'm going to drum up more shenanigans for you next week. I feel like I was a little light on the shenanigans for you. But we appreciate your time here.
Well, y'all keep up the great work.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. There he is. Former Texans defensive lineman, N.D. Kalu. All right, coming up next, let's get into what's popping. Obviously, Rockets win. More news about the Astros. And I guess maybe someone who doesn't like Mark Gastineau. We'll do all that next.
Biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
Yeah, let's get into What's Poppin' here on a Thursday in the Loop on Sports Radio 610. I should let you know what's coming up later on Sports Radio 610. As mentioned, it's a Thirsty Thursday, which means the boys, Clint and Ron, will be out at Buffalo Wild Wings, and they're back at Washington Ave. Y'all, so go say what's up to the fellas as they do their live broadcast from 2 to 6. Really making it a Thirsty Thursday. Get you something to sip on. Get you some eats. Man, it's a good time when you hang out with those fellas. But all right, what's popping? And what is popping is in the city of Houston, getting some basketball love, baby.
Yeah, they are.
Getting some basketball love. Big time victory in the NBA Cup quarterfinals. And really, more importantly, big time victory over them boys that thought that they could keep beating up on you and that you would not push back. Yes, the Rockets got their victory against the Warriors 91-90 last night at Toyota Center. It was a late game, but that did not stop those young boys from being thirsty, as Alperen Şengün said, like showing a level of grit, a level of effort and energy that was undeniable. Defense at like an elite level, just enough offense to get through, and they get a big-time victory, and they will move on and go play in Las Vegas to try and secure a NBA Cup, the second of its kind ever in NBA history.
I think that's one of the more impressive wins the Texans. The Rockets have had 3 years, maybe?
In the Ime tenure. Like, yeah. I think that this was a crowning achievement or like a big time moment in the Ime tenure. I know that Tim McMahon wrote a piece for ESPN about this. I know Kelly Yeko was writing a piece that was somewhat similar or just kind of speaking to that game. But Tim McMahon wrote a piece detailing kind of the Ime Udoka kind of effect on this team, the toughness, the determination that they show. And that was all super on display in that game against the Warriors, where a team that likes shooting threes, you had them in the gulag. They were in hell offensively outside of the third quarter where it kind of got a little sloppy for the Rockets, but they reined it in. I think one of the big things for me is like very few of these guys have played in a high-intensity game like this. You have Fred VanVleet that's, you know, kind of played for a championship. But other than that, like not a lot of guys on this team have that level of experience. And this was dropping them into the pool in the deep end in some ways. And they showed up and they answered the call with a resounding level of effort. And I was very impressed by that.
Yeah, and I'm not even talking about that. I did get into...
Oh, my bad.
No.
I was out here writing soliloquies and stuff. And you're like, that's not even what I was talking about.
I'm saying in addition to that, it's not for me, it's not necessarily about like NBA Cup. I'm not getting swept up in that. I am more than I thought I would
NBA
be.
NBA Cup fever, baby.
Yeah, it's not that, but I appreciate it more. But you had some stakes.
Yes.
You know, you had some actual, you know, you have to play and win this game to get to another level, another round, so to speak. And that mattered. It's not like, oh, the NBA Cup. But I think it mattered in that regard. And I thought it also mattered, just you mentioned elite defense. Like they couldn't even, this is the Golden State Warriors, man. They couldn't even get off shots.
90 points. 8 24-second shot clock violation.
They couldn't even get off shots.
8 of them. They had 8 instances where the team did not even get a shot off in time, and they had a few more instances where they put up one of them
late
ones just to get one up. 90 points is what they held the Golden State Warriors to. Incredible effort there.
Yeah.
Offensively, there's still some things, right? Like, you still need to find a level of consistent offense. I'm going to be that guy right now. I have to apologize, I guess. Jalen Green with an effort where he gets to 12 points, a 5 of 15 effort for him. He was doing a little bit of cutting here and there, which I thought was interesting. But, yeah, you would like to have a little bit more consistency, especially in instances where you might need one person to go a little bit. But a person that I need to tip my cap to 100%, Jabari Smith.
I was just going to say that. The thing that made up for it was Jabari Smith and Amen Thompson. I thought on top of... Alperen Şengün, I mean, just a hell of a game. I mean, it was a low-scoring game. I think he had 26, right?
Who, Jabari? Alperen Şengün. Yeah, Şengün, 26 and 11, another double-double. He continues to be the
hub. And then 91 points.
Right. He's
like,
one,
he was, that was a big-time game.
He's one of the few guys that you can give the ball to, and like that's the reason why he's the hub. You get the ball to him, and he has a way where he can attack somebody one-on-one on the post. The post play is incredible. In fact, Ime gave that plaudits in the post game. But Jabari, I think, this was one of those games that highlights the incredible amount of versatility that he has, the ways in which he helps make this go with the switchability and versatility that he has on defense. Hell, he got a block at the end of the game on the attempted winner for Golden State. Like, Jabari was incredible in this game. And one of the things he also added, he was one of two people who knocked down multiple three-pointers, one of three people who knocked down any three-pointers in this game. That just speaks to, I mean, he's a dude that guards centers.
Yeah.
He can guard 1 through 5 really at various points, but like consistently probably like 2 or 3 through 5. Like, he can guard that way. You know, he'll do anything that you need of him. He might not be a focal point, but when he gets an opportunity, he usually make the most of it. Really, salute to Jabari Smith Jr. In this one. Him and, of course, the rest of the fellas, all of them, get a big-time win, and they go to Vegas Saturday. They'll face off against the Oklahoma City Thunder. The hits keep coming for them when it comes to NBA Cup play and high-level play for this Rockets team. All right, continuing in what's popping. More Astros news, kind of. I guess I'll ask this as a question. Are you where I am, where it just feels like Kyle Tucker is as good as gone?
Yes. I feel like the Soto thing was really, really sort of one of the things that kind of accelerated this. And I also feel like the Astros might, and you might hear some of this when we get to buy or sell at 12:40, but the Astros have just kind of been saying a lot of things and not necessarily meaning them, you know, regarding Kyle Tucker, regarding Alex Bregman. I mean, it's not hard for Kyle Tucker to make this decision, you know, to ask for a trade, to hope for a trade, whatever it may be.
You think this is a decision for him?
Well, I think that he has an effect on it. I think agents do, and he does. You know, all the arbitration he's been through. I think that the Astros clearly make the decision ultimately, and I don't think it's a decision they want to make. We're talking, I could easily see Kyle Tucker, you know, getting $450 million whenever his contract comes due, whether it's after a trade and they extend him or free agency or whatever, based only on Soto, what he got. I mean, so Astros aren't going to give him an 8-9 year deal for $450 million. It's not going to do it.
Yeah, there's been all sorts of Yankees news. Actually, we won't go to this audio hit fic. But Yankees Association, Red Sox Association with Bregman more, but Cubs have had some rumors. It just feels like we have continued to flood the market with various things about Kyle Tucker, and it feels like that is a done deal, and I feel like it's necessary, right? Again, you highlighted how it's going to be tough to get him re-signed. I think you can bring back a lot of with the high value that he will have in the marketplace right now. Bring back a lot of young talent. And I think maybe you have to consider Fromber as well with the value that he brings, especially as a dude who is, you know, a bona fide argument as being an ace while also being relatively affordable for a team. I think that that's a good sell as well, and help yourself kind of do a little bit of a retool, a little maybe a step back for this season, but then give yourself an opportunity to step forward. All right. I did say that I was going to get to this is Boomer Esiason. Who is a former NFL quarterback. I always forget that, honestly.
Great quarterback.
Yeah. You can speak to that more than I could. I'm not going to pretend like I got to watch him. I just think of Boomer as the dude who be talking on the air. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it feels like he's just reading the newspaper on some of these minutes. But apparently, that all of that aside, the Mark Gastineau clip that is going around of him going and really telling Brett Favre about himself and really wanting, you know, to make it known that he was hurt by that sack that Michael Strahan got to beat his record. Apparently, Boomer Esiason, he don't care none about that.
You hurt me, Brett.
And then the representative at that point ushers Favre away. All right,
so
let me ask you
a question. So, Mark Gastineau is dealing with some medical issues, is he not?
It has to be.
Right, so I can't stand the guy. You know, the guy was a dirty, cheap shot and son of a bitch, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I know this because he was on the elevator in the West and in Cincinnati telling my buddies who are there to watch the game, if you tell your boy Boomer to call an ambulance because he's going down. And he was trying to cheap shot me the whole damn game. So screw him. That's what I say. Yeah. I knew he would be pissed because that's exactly what it looked like for Michael Strahan and Brett Favre. It looked exactly like that. So I understand why he's pissed. But screw him. I don't care.
That's good. It was a cheap shot.
I did not expect that.
Didn't either.
He need to bring that to some of those sports minutes, man.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm looking for.
I might stick around and listen.
That is what I'm looking for from the sports minute. Boomer, bring that energy, bro. Yeah. Don't send no happy birthday shout outs. Yeah. I don't care about those. Let me know what's really good.
That scar runs deep, deep. And I believe Boomer because it's out of character. First of all, he went like, oh, Gastineau? Oh, I got something to say about Gastineau.
Yeah. Let me tell you about Mark Gastineau.
Yeah, say that in that sports minute, buddy.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I was like, oh, okay. So let us know how you really feel. And someone did ask on the text line, you know, considering the way that the Rockets played last night and obviously the offense and all those things, would you trade for Jimmy Butler and send Jalen Green and bench players and all those things? And I'm like, one, we kind of went through this. I don't know that Jimmy Butler's older. I don't know how much. Well, I mean, I do think that he provides a valuable thing that you need, but it does. I don't know with the time window that you have with this youth, if that's the way to go. Also, you couldn't trade Jalen Green this year. Like it's one of those contractual CBA novelty.
Yeah,
things
because of the contract
hard.
You got.
Yeah, he just got a contract extension.
It's probably a way they could trade for him without giving up that court. They could probably trade like a.
I think they could. They could.
Yeah, without touching Jalen Green. Mm-hmm. But I don't even know if I'd do that.
It would
that.
Be tough. No, actually, it would actually be tough.
It'd be a lot of draft picks.
Well, you'd have to find a way to make the salaries get close, too, because that's generally part of the CBA is you need to have the salaries close. But then also, with the additional CBA, it's made it harder to make these big-time deals because of the second and third, first and second aprons. And I'm not going to get into the depths of the CBA because, first of all, I don't know it well enough. And then second of all, y'all not trying to hear that. Yeah. Right? Do you really want to go through legalese? Nobody wants that. But it just understand that it adds like different caps, and those caps are like take away the ability to maneuver and navigate. So teams are really, really careful about that. And I just don't know that you have a lot of assets monetarily that you could make that trade and still feel good about what the team is that you have, like that you're not blowing up a lot of valuable pieces, sending them out.
You would have to get rid of at least one or two valuable pieces.
Yeah.
We wouldn't do that at all. Dylan Brooks. That's one of them. Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean,
it's a couple people on there that could make it. I've seen somebody say they could make it work, but I don't know if Miami would accept that.
Yeah.
Because the other person got to be cool with the deal.
Mm-hmm. And you got to give you got to give Dylan Brooks a lot of credit. He is also factored into some of the toughness, some of the, consistency that you have found, particularly defensively on this team. Like, he could be a little bit of a, I don't know, what's the right word? What's a good word?
Cause a lot.
He could be a lot sometimes, is the way that
the
I'll
most.
Go. But he's found a way, or not even found a way, because that feels kind of derogatory, but he's been a revelation for at least for the expectations that I had on this team. So yeah, shout out to the Rockets again, man. I'm just so happy that they got that victory. Like it clearly meant a lot to him. Real quick, can you give me that Fred VanVleet? Because this was Fred VanVleet talking after the game, and I mean, this is a dude who's a veteran. He's one of the few dudes that's played in these high level of stakes. Listen to how giddy he sounds talking about this team.
Yeah, for sure. I think that we felt like we were close last year. It's fun, man. I ain't had this much fun in a long time playing for something, playing well, and now we got more work to do.
Was this a goal at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, for sure. I think that we felt like we were close last year. Ultimately, didn't make it, so we wanted to get it this year. We've been playing well, kind of start the season out, so it would be a good test for us to go to Vegas and try to win some.
He's so excited.
They're excited. They should
ain't
be.
Had that much fun in a long time.
They should be. Time. They should Damn. Be.
Hey, we're having fun too, especially on today's show. It's in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, D'Amico Ryans talked about Christian Harris and other things. Let's get a listen to the head coach of this Texans team next.